Hello, everyone. I am James Dean Mixes from the Mixing Music Podcast, member exclusive episodes, where every week DK and I break down the technical side of mixing, mastering, and music production. With the normal weekly episodes, you get to hear DK and Lou talk about the more philosophical side of the music industry. On the member exclusive episodes, DK and I get more into the nitty-gritty technical side of things. We sometimes do mix breakdowns, we break down technical tips, and sometimes we share things that couldn't be shared on the normal public episodes. And we release two of these episodes every week. So for $3.99 a month, you get quite the bang for your buck. So go check out the mixingmusicpodcast.com or click on the link in the description to subscribe now. So without further ado, here's an episode from the vault. Hello and welcome to the Mixing Music Podcast. I'm your host, James Dean Mixes, and with me here today is the wonderful, the fabulous, the hair as crazy as I've ever seen it, DK.
Yeah, I look like...
DK Mixes.
Dude, I look like I'm good at composing jazz. Dude, I look like I use like add nine chords, dude.
You look like you listen exclusively to Jacob Collier.
I look like I know what a Mixolydian scale sounds like. I look like I exclusively use Lydian scales on Tuesdays because that feels right. anyway, you want me to keep going?
I've never seen your hair this messed up. It's usually very tight. I like it though.
Looks like someone sexually harassed my head while I was sleeping.
I think that's your wife.
Yeah. sexually harassing my head. Yeah, dude. Looks like I've been traveling in luggage just to get a free flight to Australia.
Speaking of free flights to Australia, our clip today is from Tizio.
What the fuck? That has nothing to do with Australia. It's funny.
I was waiting for one of your things to have to do with Tizio, but I couldn't.
Couldn't think of it.
So with Tizio, this is my first time watching him mix. He did like for the Record Studios. He did like he mixed again a song that he's mixed a year ago. It was really cool watching him because I've never seen his style. I didn't know what he does. He compresses. I was telling DK this before we started recording. He compresses everything a lot. He uses the C2 compressor a lot too. And he also does. He does a lot of. He uses like pretty much almost all the plugin slots on like a lot of the things, which is interesting. Yeah, that was cool. He's very into consistency, but from this clip, he had some interesting thoughts he gave on using the reference track, especially when it comes to like things that are loud, like hi-hats and snares. Without further ado, roll the clip.
I gotta go up now that I've just done my first step of gain staging, so I gotta bring the demo up now. Yeah, it's already like a lot tighter and cleaner.
Do you listen for like the kick or for the snare when you gain mastery?
Yeah, if their snare is too loud, I'm listening to make sure that my snare is loud, but not too low. If their snare is really loud, I'm not gonna just be like, fuck that, I always put my snares here. I'm gonna find a compromise where I'm like, that's way too loud, I'm willing to go this loud, but I can't go that loud. If I just say, fuck you, I'm gonna go where I normally go, it'll kill the energy on the record. Same with like hi-hats. Like, that's the worst, is when you get a demo where the hi-hats are really loud, because then you're like, well, that's the hi-hats are way too loud, you bring them down, and then when you compare the mixes, their mix sounds like way more energetic than yours, and you know how it is. Like,
because a lot of times, like at least with in hip-hop, and with all genres, like the artists, when they're writing, they'll latch onto a certain thing in the rough.
Yeah, the snare being loud, the hi-hat being loud.
Or it might be a melody, like something in the melody, something that they'll latch onto. So when the relationship between their voice and that changes, that's when you start running into
issues. Why it's a compromise, and I'm sure you do the same. You're like, that's way too loud, but I'll go here. I'll see if this works. And if they want to push me a dB, maybe I'll do a little more EQing and then turn it up. You find how you can get to a point where they're happy, but you're not like, I don't want to be a part of this anymore. Yeah. It's like one of those, it's a very light, it's a place in the middle of the two.
Okay, so to recap, he was pretty much A-B-ing, and throughout the whole mix, he did this. He A-B'd from the reference quite a bit, and he's talking about how he kind of has to compromise when he gets a reference mix, because there's something that they usually like about it. And so sometimes the hi-hats are very hot and they're very loud, or the snares and they're very loud, and he doesn't want it to screw over the clip. Or a lot of times you could risk making it sound like something's lost energy if you turn him down, or if you kind of dull the hi-hats or the snare. So he's talking about how he usually tries to find a compromise somewhere in the middle. DK, what were your thoughts on this?
Yeah, here's what I wrote down while I was listening. By the way, if anybody's wondering, I write down things that I'm thinking while I'm listening. And here's what I wrote down. The idea of compromise with the demo. Some engineers are known for fuck your rough mix, Jason Jason Joshua. Even Jason Joshua self-admittedly understands the importance of the demo and maintaining true to that. Yes, I think it's very interesting that if this is the example that Leslie Brathwaite gives all the time. If the demo has hi-hats that are way too loud, you probably want to leave them louder in the in your mix. You don't really know what people are latching onto with the demos. So that's another thing that I wrote down, like demo-itis. It's interesting. I think it's low-hanging fruit and low IQ to talk about how people have demo-itis. I think the next advanced level of thinking and understanding is trying to figure out what's causing them to give demo-itis. For example, I do think people have demo-itis because they spend so much emotional energy trying to make something good. They don't realize that they can make something better, but better is subjective. And here's the thing. I think that when people make things quote unquote better, they're just changing it so much so they lose that thing. Like even if something is mixed poorly and they sent it to you to get mixed, sometimes that part of that poor mixing is a sound. It's an emotion. Sometimes it's angst, or it's like it feels punk rock even though it's not, right? Like right now I'm doing like a lot of Barely Human and Odatari stuff, like this hyper pop, very distorted TikTok funk music, and it's punk rock. And if I don't get it just as loud and just as distorted, if not more distorted, and fuck it up more, they're gonna complain. It can't be too clean from a classical mixing perspective. Like it can't. So people don't realize, like, sometimes I don't think people give producers and songwriters, and even if they have less experience, the engineers, I don't think mixers oftentimes, lesser experienced mixers, give them enough credit. If you live life thinking that you know more than everybody around you, that's going to fuck you up. So it's like you need to realize that they may know less than you on the technical side, but you have to respect that they got there and they approved it to a point. And unless they tell you otherwise, or even if they tell you otherwise, you have to learn to trust that other people know what's going on and do things on purpose more than you think they do. I think that's beyond mixing. That's kind of like a psychological truth that people need to have some awareness on. Demo-itis is usually like, it's sometimes it's the hi-hat. People grasp and cling to things. That's like, he mentioned that. I think that's really important. They latch on to things. What is it that they latched onto? This is all, most of the time, it's unspoken communication. And so this is something that we do inherently. James, I know you do this too, and you see me do this. When I'm listening to a demo, I'm inherently picking up small details. What are they trying to tell me with this? And I'm listening to my heart and what it's telling me, my emotions are telling me. This mix feels like it just wants to bounce a little bit harder. Like, so the song and their decisions, it talks to me. Like I'm literally like a, what is that? The dog whisperer, but this like mix whisperer, you know, I hear what it wants me to do. And it's not based on technical things. It's anyway. The third thing is, he says, we try to find that in between happy and I don't want to work with you anymore. So that compromise, going back to the idea of like compromise. I think that this is something that we've said before, and I will be bold enough to say it again. If you are the engineer we've all said that before, but if you are the type of engineer that has recently said that or currently says that, or says that wait more than once a year, it's your fault. You suck as a mixer. It's not their fault. You suck as a mixer. And it's something you need to work on. And I'm using royal you there for whoever needs to hear this. Like this is very important. Like it is your problem. That is so prideful, so stupid. And you are so unimaginative that you can't help them achieve their own dream. Yo, that's that is downright disgraceful and dishonorable. You need to fix that.
I love how Jesse Ray talked about it, even though we did a clip from him last episode, but he was in that same interview. He was talking about, dude, I love being the computer bitch. I will be the computer bitch any day if you want to pay me to do your mix. And it's kind of true. Like, you're just like, yeah, you're just be more than happy to.
Yeah, dude. Yeah. Being the computer bitch. That's funny. Yeah. It's I don't mind being the computer bitch in a mixing session. Sure. In a tracking session, in a tracking, and here's the thing, dude, like, you find out every single time, like, in retrospect, every single time that I thought that I was like, I don't want to work with this person anymore, and I listen back to the mix in retrospect, I 100% of the time think, oh, like, it's actually not as bad as I thought it was. Like, it works well, actually. But it's like, it's always a pride thing. It just comes down to pride and an inability to service your clients.
Yeah.
Imagine a chef coming out to do that every single time you went to Wendy's. You fucking $50 per mix, son of a bitch. Like, what are you doing? Like, what are you doing complaining that they don't know what they're doing? No, neither of you do. All right.
Yeah.
Anyway, so
I have two thoughts, though, I want to share with this.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
I forgot. Oh, the first one's a quick one. It's just, I actually, like, I've always, like, I've kind of low-key enjoyed the revision process.
I love it,
dude.
In
a weird way, it's less stressful because all the guessing work is out and you know exactly what they need. And so, yeah, I like it. It's cool. It's like, in a weird way, it's easy work. That's the only way I know how to word it right now. And then a personal story that I'm experiencing right now is I'm mixing an album and they've already had the album mixed and mastered before. And they tested me out for mixing and they like it more than the approved mix and master, but they still send me that as a reference. And first song, I didn't stick to it probably as much as I should have. And a lot of her notes were like, hey, can you have this at this level, like in the reference? And so it is like what, like you said, like there is something that they have approved of in the reference that you get. And so like, the more that I've like really stuck to, especially the levels and everything compared to each other in the mix and the reference mix, the less notes I've gotten. And so it's just, it's just like, I think I like what you said. They approved of something in the reference mix.
There's like
it's a good reference and it saves you time with revisions.
I'm going to try to articulate this. I wonder if I will be able to, but there's another dimension that we can add to this. In this case, to be quite fair, you lucked out. Like, because they could have easily said, we like this shittier rough more, actually. Yeah. Like, you took it in the wrong direction. But in this case, you took a guess. Like, I'm going to say what it is. Sometimes it feels like you fucking just guessed what you think, you interpret what you think they want, and they try their best to articulate it before. You try your best to ask what they want before. Yeah. But somehow, at the end of the day, you guessed a direction that was different from the original demo and you got lucky, right? So this is another concept too. Like, the more that you have to change, the more you're going to be based on luck. And, or the second skill, which is the ability to interpret what is desired, right? So it's kind of like this luck slash tier, like a skill-based thing. Because like, I do feel like some mixes, I'm guessing what direction I want to go and I try my best to not be in a position where I have to guess. But I feel like some of my best mixes and the ones where the clients are happiest, there's no guessing going on. I know exactly where they want to go. Whether it's through revisions or even through the V1, usually it's you make the most amount of, build the most amount of trust in the V1. But slowly, James, and for anybody listening, you'll get better at interpreting and you're going to find that you're not guessing. You kind of learn to interpret or communicate in a way that you no longer guess what direction they want to go. And that's ideal. That's a skill that is learned through years of experience.
Yeah. And to add on to that, I like that you said I was lucky because I think I was in this case. I think what kept me there is that the difference between mine and like the other mix was that mine did sound very professional. And not to talk shit on like the other mix, but it didn't. And so I think that's what caused them to keep me. Where if I was up against someone who also has mixes that sound professional, but the demo.
But I mean, sometimes literally this is an interesting topic too, because like I was literally talking to a friend who came over, and he is in the middle of mixing a new Wu-Tang album. Not like a remix, like a new Wu-Tang album. And
shit,
he showed me the demos that of other people's songs that they want it to sound like. And it sounds like shitty boom bap. Like, there's no low end, and the kick drum is way too loud. Like, compared to a modern mix, it does not sound anything like it. And he's like, even the Wu-Tang, like, even these rappers on like, they're not recording on the best quality mics. Like, the mics, like, Method Man's vocals aren't the best, you know?
Yeah.
And so it's like, here's the thing too. It's like, if you didn't talk to them beforehand and set, and they didn't say, or even if... Okay, Wu-Tang is significantly more experienced, I assume, than whoever you're working with, right? But, like, it's still a guess at the end of the day because, like, unless they tell you, and even if they tell you specifically, we want this to sound more modern, and they just didn't realize how you interpreted what modern means, they could have very easily liked the original mix. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Because, better it's at the end of the day, even after your description, one is obviously shittier. But
yeah,
the biggest feedback this guy gets is, dude, the mixes are too clean. Dude, the mixes are too good. It needs to be shittier.
Mm.
And like, that's a vibe that they're going for. And it sounds like you communicated with the client, so you're trying to eliminate. But that's like a lot of the point of communicating with clients.
Oh, yeah. Luckily, she did send me another like a very popular song to also have a reference to.
Oh, perfect. Yeah. So like all that communication beforehand is to eliminate the guesswork. But dude, there's been times where like, especially with like mastering, like I have one client that is skimping on the mixing and he's like, do a lot. So I'm like mixing a two track. He calls it mastering, but like I'm mixing a two track. Like I'm doing big EQ moves. I'm doing big compression moves. I'm like doing tools like RX and like expansion to like make things bounce a little bit harder, like bringing back dynamics, you know? And at the end of the day, every time I do something extreme, like, I'm guessing. I'm guessing this is what you want. And that's like the one part of mixing that makes it a little bit less fun. It's like, and the reason why you don't want to practice mixing with random stems you find on the internet, like you want to practice mixing with a client that can disagree with you. Because learning how to mix in a void without feedback is not learning how to mix at all.
Yeah. And also knowing when to communicate when you're okay to put on some extra sauce or not. Like luckily the same client, she will tell me clearly like, hey, can you like put some extra sauce on this part, which pretty much is her saying like, hey, can you do something really cool here? I just don't know what it means.
Dude, but
that's
been
communicated beforehand.
That's been communicated. That usually gets communicated beforehand as well. But like if it's not communicated, for every story that I say that I guess and I did this really cool glitch or like this, I did like a little production thing, something beyond mixing that I thought like this crazy delay that I think it sounded dope or like filtering. For every story that I have that like of a client that was like really happy that I did something really cool and something different that they've never heard before or that they weren't expecting, I have an equal and potentially more horror stories of that ruined their trust completely. So then it comes down to the point, it's like statistically, why would you even take that risk?
Yeah.
Because like even this is a conversation Jesse and I had because it was on the last episode. It's like we both used to do this thing where I would send them the mix that they want exactly the way they wanted close to the demo. And I might send them a mix that something that I like in a direction that I think is better. And the thing that Jesse and I, we talked about and the thing that we learned is that just the idea of sending a mix, that B mix has lost a lot of trust. Like that never went well. Almost never. Because even if they like the B mix, now there's like this level of pride in it. Like you're creating barriers and it's completely unnecessary. Because now you're giving them like, oh, we didn't, now we have to choose again. So it's like the work of choosing and having to pick which one sounds better. It's like you're giving them work.
It's more work. I never thought of it that way. That makes
so
sense.
So this is something that at the end of the day, there's a reason why these big, big, big engineers end up doing significantly less because it's an unnecessary risk. I would think it's better if you just realize you honor the producer, the original thing. That's very important. I think that's the most important part of this episode and with Tizio. And even Jason Joshua admits that he has to, the fuck your mix guy, fuck your rough mix. I'm here to make hits, not make your mix sound better. That guy is, understands the value of the demo.
Yeah. No, I get that. I feel like that's a good note to end it on. Thank you everyone for listening. Go check out the full interview. It was really cool because it was my first time like getting a grasp of TZO's mixing style. It's very different from my approach, but I think it's really cool to watch. He also, DK, I forgot to tell you this. He also starts very similar to you and I, where he starts with the low end stuff, soloed, and then he builds out from there. But I think he starts on the kick drum and then he does the bass.
But that's dope. Yeah, he goes for the low end first. Nice.
But anyways, go check out Just For The Record. They did it. And yeah, feel free to go check out the Mixing Music Podcast website as well. And without further ado, DK, sign us off.
Happy mixing, my friends, and stay saucy. Can't get enough of the Mixing Music Podcast and want 3 times the amount of episodes every week? Subscribe to our exclusive content for only $4 a month or $40 a year at mixingmusicpodcast.com/exclusive. Happy mixing, my friends, and enjoy the show.